This is the Memphis Real Estate Hour on KWAM. And now here's your host, Dean Harris.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Memphis Real Estate Hour. I am your host, Dean Harris. I'm with Crestcore Realty over on Summer Avenue, and I appreciate you guys tuning in this morning at AM 990 Memphis, 107.9 The Voice, or streaming the show online at www.kwam990.com. Guys, we're also on the Facebook Live, so please join us on the Facebook page, the Memphis Real Estate Hour. There are about 50 or so plus shows on the Memphis Real Estate Hour Facebook page, so go there, click on videos, and check out all the past shows that we've been doing, I guess for the past year or so. There's about 50 plus on there. The Memphis Real Estate Hour concentrates on investing in Memphis real estate, and we will focus on all those related topics. I'll discuss local and national investment trends, as well as give you an inside look at what it takes to become an investor here in Memphis, and or what it takes to become a bigger or better investor. Remind you guys every single show that I am an investor, so if you have that home that you need to sell quickly, or you know someone that has that home they need to sell quickly, email me at dean@crestcore.com, and I'll get you a cash offer on that home today. I don't really care about the condition or where it's at, or really anything about the home. It's you could have inherited it. You it could be a burnout. I mean, like, it doesn't matter to me the extreme of the condition. So just shoot me an email, dean@crestcore.com. On today's show, Dan Butler and I will be talking about interest rates and inventory. Interest rates are rising, inventory is low. So now what do we do? We're gonna tackle that. And let's jump right into it. Dan, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
You know, I'm doing well. We're getting into the Halloween season.
Yeah. Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Bunch of rain.
I got a few. Actually, my whole community has switched. We're going to trick-or-treat tonight.
That's what everybody's doing.
The
it's
whole
so funny.
Thing, man. I mean, we're...
So they put some rain jackets on, an umbrella, and let's go.
And just, you know, what the kids do way back
way
when.
Way back
you know?
When, right.
We trick-or-treated. Our parents kicked us out and made us do it. But anyway, so we're getting ready for that. But let's dive into... let's talk about our interest rates and kind of our inventory. Our interest rates are rising. The inventory is staying low. So I guess our topic is now what? What are you seeing interest rates doing right now?
Well, it's been interesting the last couple of weeks between a few meetings that we've been to just out of town and locally with economists and, you know, data analysts and those kind of things. And everybody's trying to, you know, now
break
what?
The future.
Yeah, what's going on? What do we do? What's, you know, it doesn't feel right, you know.
Did you hear a panic tone or was it more just like, hey, this is a change?
No panic. No, I think it was more of just from a real estate investment side. I think it's all positive, in my opinion.
I think people only people that are panicking are the residential retail stuff. If
retail.
There is any panic,
correct.
Yeah. The way I look at this is if we have a dip or a mini crash in our home market, that's a positive thing for our investors.
Correct.
More foreclosures, more bankruptcies, more. You know, people that are having to get out of it for various reasons. So I'm not.
But, you know, I think, you know, interest rates are probably going to get close to 5% by year end, the 30-year, you know, Fannie Mae product. Mm-hmm. We're going to probably get closer to 6% by end of 2019 is what they're predicting. The Fed is saying they're going to raise rates by the end of the year and then several times next year. So just be prepared to know that's happening.
How do you think that'll affect investors?
You know, I think there's going to be this weird, if I just. Thinking out loud, I would think that there would be a little bit of pullback.
Yeah.
You know, and just, all right, my numbers aren't working like they were before, you know, as far as, you know, my return on investment and that kind of thing. And
changed a little.
It changed a little bit, right? Your offer is going to be a little bit less because you got to pay more in interest and, you know, on that money. So.
That's what I see, really.
Are people starting to talk about that when you're...
A little. I mean, they're talking about, hey, if the rates go up, I mean, we'll have to offer a little lower. I mean, like, so if your max is 50, you might be at 47.
Yeah, it's not like huge.
No,
but it's several thousand dollars.
Sellers should be aware.
Correct.
I mean, it's coming. So anything that keeps rising, as we saw our prices rise here, it's going to plateau out. And then at some point, they could shrink a little bit. But
To your point, I think that's what's going to happen. I think we're going to see... pricing plateau, especially on the investment side, and maybe even a retraction a little bit on what people are willing to pay. I mean, that's just part of
a real estate market.
As I was telling my daughter last night, everything boils down to math.
Everything.
You know, if you think about the world, you know, yeah. I could digress in a different conversation, but I mean, everything just boils down to math. It's dollars and cents and numbers and percentages. And so people are going to, you know, follow what interest rates tell you what, the, you know,
yeah,
your offer should be. And so I think the other part of that is just, you know, from an investment standpoint, you know, that's one of the things I've talked a ton about as far as home ownership is, I think it's the lowest it's been since 2016. So it's, you know,
people are renting.
It's people are renting more and more. Mm-hmm. The highest it got was in 2004. And I think that's back, end of Clinton, going into Bush.
I believe so.
You know, with all that people, you know, promoting home ownership, it got up to 69% nationally.
Yeah, home ownership.
Yeah. And that's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of houses, if not millions, the difference between what people rent versus what people own. Does that make
sense?
Why
do you think that is? You think people want the flexibility more, or you think there's worse credit applicants, or, I mean, what do you, this is total opinion thing, but.
Well, no, I mean, if you look at some of the other notes I put down, just, you know, households are growing by 1 million a year, have been since 2010, but we're only producing 885,000 units a year. And so, and with blight and just, you know, just age of homes, you know, there's something at certain neighborhoods, certain homes, they're just not going to exist anymore.
Right.
You know, think about places around South Memphis or North Memphis or, yeah. You know, there's houses that have been bulldozed that for our lifetime may never come back. You know, so that's a housing unit. Does that make sense? So
yeah,
they're saying that we're, you know, we're tearing down probably several hundred thousand a year nationwide. And so
if you combat that with 885
and the million growth
and the million,
you're
growth.
Hundreds of thousands deficit between people that need to have a place to stay and live versus what you produced out there. Does that
all
make sense?
This is great news for investors.
Oh, absolutely.
All this is, I mean, and it's not a spin. I mean, we're giving you some facts here that we're having a shortage of not just residential retail properties, but we're getting more and more tenants, so there's going to be more and more of those opportunities. Well, you just recently visited and went to a kind of an economic conference, is that right?
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that. I know we're going off the cuff here a little bit, but talk a little bit about that and see and tell us kind of what you heard, what you learned, anything interesting.
Well, I think a lot of it, you know, if you... with the tariffs and with, you know, labor shortage and all that stuff, you know, the actual cost of housing has gone up.
Yep.
So with, and it hasn't matched people's raises and people's income, you know, that's kind of stayed flat.
Yep.
So the affordability is down almost 10%.
Wow.
So what you could buy a year ago,
you can't now.
You can't now, you know, or you're going to spend a greater percentage of your net income, your take-home pay, for that house, you know, so no wonder people are saying, well, maybe I'll just rent for a little while, you know.
It's cheaper to rent.
It's cheaper to rent. Just let me rent for a while and, you know, build back up my income, you know, through promotions and different things. And
I tell you what affects that a lot, too, is that down payment. I mean, there's a lot of people that could pay a mortgage, but 3.5% or 5% are some of the lowest things you can put down. Sometimes I just can't do.
Yeah.
And for rental income, I mean, for rental properties, what is it, the first month rent typically?
Right,
that you got to put down. So I mean,
$1,000
versus $1,000 with a fraction of
versus $5,000 or more. Right,
that's exactly right.
I mean, well, and they're not really building. You know, it's tough to find in Memphis in a good neighborhood. You know, a house that's, you know, under $200,000.
Yes, that's tough.
You know, I think what was the average that Wendy came through last week?
Oh,
189 for the whole city, and that's taking into account Fraser, Orange Mound,
everything.
And Westwood, and 3 at 109. You know, like. That's taking the whole thing. We're saying as a city now, we're over almost 200,000 average.
She said,
does that make sense?
You know, my gosh. She said the average new construction bill was like 350.
Right.
And that's amazing.
Well, and the reason for that is lots are more expensive. Construction's gone up. And so you've got to build bigger houses for it to be worth that GC, that general contractor's time and effort and money. Does that make sense?
Like, I'll give you an example, new construction example. Builders used to tell me, you know, I started in new construction, just a little background here. I spent my first 5 years in real estate and new construction. So builders would tell me, we have to sell the property, the finished product, at mm-hmm. 5 times what we bought the lot for.
I bought 20% of
20%.
Yep.
So if the lots used to be $30,000, then they only had to sell. They only needed to build $150,000 to $160,000 house.
Yep.
Now that they've bumped up to $50,000, now right. they're having to sell that in that same area in that same $250,000 plus.
Yeah,
it's an enormous gap right there from affordability. $70,000. I mean, you know, it's just all of it. The down payment's more. The payment's more. Everything's more. So if it starts with the land, if land cost is going up on these mm-hmm. builders and development costs are going up, that's to blame for some of these increases, I believe, in this new construction.
Yeah, and I wonder if that still holds true. We got to ask some builders next week just what's that looking like, because 20% was the industry norm, which you always heard. But if construction costs are going up, you know, and some of the guys I'd spoke with in Dallas a couple weeks ago, they said that right now it's the construction costs has only affected them $2,000 or $3,000. So
oh, really,
right now, you know,
wonder where that's coming from the most. I mean, this is totally off.
I think it's wood and shingles. Shingles went up, you know, $10 a square in the last couple months.
Have they really?
Yeah,
I love knowing like why,
huh?
It's
related. If you think about shingles, go all the way back to gas. You know. The product, the
everything
kind of the natural ingredients that go into
shingles.
You know, shingle production, you know, asphalt and all that kind of stuff. So if gas is going up, you know, anything with resin or asphalt or anything like that, those are all affected by gas pricing.
Yes.
So shingles, like I said, $10 a square. So now a roof that's 20 squares, you know, that's a typical, call it 1,200 square foot house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guesstimating here. Mm-hmm. But that's 20 times 10. That's $200 more a house.
Which just doesn't sound like a lot, but just in labor cost. I mean, no, material cost. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So just in one fell swoop in a quarter, roofs went up $200, basically.
Which doesn't sound like a ton, but if you've got everything and all the parts of this going up a little bit, next thing you know, it's costing you $2,000 or $3,000
right.
more to build the house.
Yeah. I think lumber, I think all that's getting affected with these tariffs. You know,
mm-hmm.
the tariff thing is fascinating. That's what's going to be interesting in the next. You know, 12 months,
mm-hmm.
you know, we put tariffs on China. They battle back and put tariffs on us with aerospace and different things. And mm-hmm. so that's affecting a lot of industries like California and Florida and even Tennessee. You know, mm-hmm. we get affected with the medical devices.
Big time.
You know, so, you know, if Trump rolls out the next set, it'll be interesting to see what that does to pricing as a whole for all our products, you know. So
mm-hmm. All right, so what does this mean for our investors? You know, you've talked about this, and this is a healthy little debate we can have for the next few minutes here.
Yeah.
But in our notes here, build to rent, you know, we talked about the build to rent strategy. You like it or you don't personally? I mean,
you know, I think that the more I'm in it, the more I'm more and more comfortable with it.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me why.
You thought I was going to say otherwise, didn't you?
I did.
I did a switcheroo on you.
Yeah, a little bit.
No, I think, you know, if it's in the right mix, you know, like, I'm not a big fan. We were talking to a guy the other day that's going to build a whole subdivision, which actually, I'll tell you about this story in just a second. I think it's a brilliant idea. But, you know, a builder that's going to build a whole cove versus of rental houses, I'm not for that.
I'm not either. That's what I was about to say.
If you're talking about building a couple houses here and there dispersed between homeownership, I think that's a great idea. You won't even know the difference.
Yeah.
Those homeowners are going to hold those tenants accountable to keep up the yard and, you know, not have parties all night. And, you know, and I think with just it's new construction, you got 10-year warranties on about everything that you built.
Yep.
You know, I think the affordability is tough. You know, I think that's a hard, you know, the prices are going up. So like you're talking $1,500 rentals, you know, your demographics of who can pay $1,500, you know,
or who want to.
I mean, we talked to a guy last week that's building rentals now that are renting for $2,000
here.
Yeah. So, but he did have a genius idea that he's working on, you know,
let's hear it.
He's building a whole subdivision of rentals
mm-hmm.
but he's creating an HOA with it that, each rental will be, every homeowner of that rental will be required to pay into that HOA, and the HOA will cut all the yards, keep everything manicured, have rules that govern, you know, I thought that was that's a pretty genius idea.
That is good. So, but you know, that protects you some. I think I still get worried about
home values.
Home values with a tenant, you know, with a street full of tenants. I mean, because no matter if we're cutting the grass and keeping the outside of it good, it's still a tenant. They still don't care as much as a homeowner. I like the idea of building a one home. You know, because that then you get all the positives and you leave the negatives, in my opinion, kind of behind. So I'm for the one-offs, maybe even two in a row or something. But the street by street build and just having a tenant being in every single one of those houses, to me, sets yourself up for a 3 to 5 year catastrophe. Especially if you're out of state, because you see it at the very beginning and it's,
well,
it's colorful and it's awesome. But then in 3 years from now, you come back and visit this area and it's like, oh my gosh, what happened?
Well, I think it also relates to the economy. As long as the economy is doing well, you know what I mean? Like, I think that it'll probably be okay. But once the economy, recession, you know, goes a blip for a couple of years, then you got more renters coming in there. And people have less money. They're going to care less. I mean, like, it's just going to be a domino.
Lower the rent,
lower the rents, which brings in a different class of tenant. So I could see on a recessionary period how that could get affected for sure.
So the way I look at this is, it's we're going to buy and hold. We got a little friend that joined us this morning.
Talking about bugs in here.
Yeah,
we told George about that.
The way I look at it is that, if I'm going to invest, I'm holding for a long time, right? I mean, the way it's a long-term game for me. I hesitate and I caution other investors on investing in something that has no history. You follow what I'm saying? I buy my rental homes in an area of town here where you yourself have been buying for 15 years. Other people that I know have been buying for 20 and 30 years in this same area, and it's producing essentially the same rental income. Where I get nervous with new construction is there's no data, there's no sample size or sample source to go to say, hey, what's going to happen? And if you're in it for 20 years, you don't know what's going to happen on a street in Cordova or wherever these guys are building these homes. So to me, from a safe perspective, and maybe that's me being too cautionary, I don't know, but from a safe and kind of reliable standpoint, to me, it's let's go where I can see history and other investors and other people that have for years been having success in those areas. That's another thing that just makes me nervous about new construction streets. I'll take a house here, new construction, sure, that's fine. But investing where it's a build to rent, so to speak, does make me a little nervous.
No, I'm with you.
You think the housing shortage is just going to get a little worse? Just kind of going by our notes here.
Yeah, I just think it's going to keep getting worse. I mean, from a shortage, so that means, which just means it's going to be good for, you know, people that own rentals. You know, I think that, you know, a bank tried to kind of gave us a trick question a couple of years ago. It's like, what if, you know, the next Bill Clinton comes in and promotes home ownership and has all these programs that now somebody that couldn't be a homeowner can now be a homeowner? And I'm like, well, it sounds like we all should sell.
Right.
And he's like, good answer.
Yeah, you know? Right.
You know, so, you know, if the market, you know, all of a sudden you bought a house that's, you know, $60,000 and, you know, it's getting a little bit harder to rent because there's home ownership incentives and, you know, now that house can sell for $100,000, you probably should sell that house. So, but we're not there yet. I mean, I just don't think that's not on the near horizon anytime. You know, that's going to be a tough, you know, somebody's going to have to have guts, have, you know, to do some of these loans that they used to do. There's going to have to be new product. You know, how are you going to securitize that? How are you going to sell it off? You know, it's going to be tough to make that happen.
How do you think this will affect our return on investment, like our numbers?
You know, one thing that, down. Well, I think that they will, I think they're going to have a lull and then I think they're going to go back up. I mean, I think, and the reason I think that is, you know, one thing where our economy, if you look at the world economy, they've already kind of slowed down.
Yep.
We're kind of in the tail where it's probably about to happen for us. You can see signs of it already, you know, as far as our economy just slowing down. I mean, you know, so what that means, and all that would happen because of the tax breaks and the interest rate being held low by the Fed. So it's all that's slowed down. That's kind of put a brake on us. Kind of a double negative there, but put the brakes on us slowing down.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so as we slow down, that creates inflationary period of time, right, where prices go up and things are kind of amok. Well, the one thing I didn't think about till listening to some of these guys talk and reading a few things is that's when rents, you know, start going up.
Yeah, that's right.
So because of cost of living. So what I've seen in Memphis specifically since 2001, mm-hmm. rents, you know, when, you know, people were so worried back in 08 through 12 about rents just nosediving. And, you know, occasionally in certain pockets, I'd lower $25, but
people still gonna have a place to live.
Yeah. So I never lowered my rates, you know. And so pretty much every renewal, every turn, we're actually trying to bump up rents right now. So I think that's only going to get more and more, which is tough because what that means is, you know, people's income is going to be consumed more for rent and mortgages and that kind of stuff.
Versus optional items.
Optional, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Just the discretionary type stuff.
That's so. Right. It's a little bit of a market. In my mind, it's a little bit of a market correction, so to speak. I don't see, you know, a lot of people ask me, hey, Dean, what do you see happening? What do you see it doing? I'm not getting any less calls. Mm-hmm. I'm not getting any less emails.
Right.
I'm not getting any less requests for good properties. I'm not getting any fewer homes from wholesalers. That's a really good market indicator if you just want to know the truth. I'm not getting any fewer homes from those guys. I'm getting a few less investors wanting to sell.
I was just about to ask you that. I feel like that's something that's kind of shifted a little bit.
A tad. I'm getting a little.
It's like everybody that's kind of wanted to sell.
They've sold.
Have sold. And it's moved.
And it's, yeah.
So.
I mean, that's not everybody. No, there's still people that want to sell. I'm still getting calls of, hey, what can you sell these for? But I'm not getting five a day.
Right.
Saying, hey, what can I get rid of this for? What can I get rid of this for? So. We're having a little bit of a market shift. I'm going back a little bit to buyer representation. I started it yesterday. I sent out 20 or 30 emails to buyers for houses that were there, just trying to drum up that end of it. So, and we can go back and forth. That's what I love about our team is we can, you know, list 50 properties today if we got them, or we can shift over and rep 50 buyers today if we needed to. So we're shifting a little bit to that. So before we left, we said, you know, investors should never stop doing what, Dan? What should they... No matter what should they not stop doing?
I mean, if you're in it for the long haul, I think you should never stop buying.
Right.
You know, because buying creates opportunities. Now, should your criteria change and your, you know, what you're looking at change?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Should your net get bigger so you can try to find the deal that matches what you want? Yes. You know, I just think you got to, you know, you hear me say this all the time, Zoo, when people are zagging and try to figure out different ways to make it happen, but I just don't think you should sit on the sideline and
I think you should Grant Cardone.
Wait for 10 exit. That's right. Don't wait for something big to happen or not to happen or, you know.
Because wonder if it never goes back to where you think it should be. Then you're just sitting here.
Yeah.
You've lost and you're not adjusting your business. I mean, if you look at fast food companies, I mean, they're selling stuff for a dollar, right? I mean, they're adjusting to what people want. Walmarts and the Targets and everybody, they adjust to what the market bears and what people are, the demand, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I don't think, you know, and a lot of people say, well, you just want to keep buying and earning commission. I was like, well, that's my business.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is, adjust your numbers, adjust the way you look at a property. Maybe a different area opens up. We're experiencing this. We guys up in 3127, all that. Where are they buying now?
They're 106, taking
106, 109. I mean, they're buying in different areas to get the same product, but they're just thinking outside the box a little bit.
Right.
It's never going to stay the same.
Mm-mm.
Never. Real estate from the time I'm on 17 years now has changed dramatically.
Well, I'll give you a quick story. I was
several times too.
You know, talked to a mentor of mine that's now retired from this real estate business, and you know, I thought what he said yesterday was really good. I mean, you know, in real estate, you know, you have swings and you have, you know, but think about what we're talking about. We're talking about $3,000 earlier. You're not talking about tens of thousands.
Right.
You know, and I was joking with him because I know he's moved his money from real estate to stock market and
then back.
He watches the market. And so I was like, man, I know my 401k took a big hit this last, I mean, the market's so volatile right now. And, he's like, yeah, man, you know, he lost probably $1 million. And you know, in a week. But He's like, I said, so did you sell? He goes, no.
Got to get that million back.
Yeah, you got to get the million back. You just got to keep moving. He goes, his point was the stocks he's picked are still making money, have low debt, you know, have a good return on investment. And so when you take the emotional drama out of the market, what's going on, the stocks that are supposed to be good will still be good and still grow. And so I say all that to say on real estate, you don't have that. You're not going to lose $1 million for the value in a week.
That's what I, when you know, people ask me, put it in the market or do this, that's right. What I go to them and tell them.
Right.
You might not ever make $1 million in a day with this. This is a marathon and not a sprint. Mm-hmm. But I can also come to you and tell you that you're surely not losing $1 million today.
Right.
Just things that are out of your control. I mean, we can save stock market versus real estate investing a debate for another day. But
that's
one thing that I can tell you with investing in real estate is your initial, you know, that huge company might have an individual make an enormous mistake, whether it's a personal one or professional one, and the stock dips 20%.
Right.
That's nothing you can do about it. Zero. Over here in real estate, you can control your destiny a little bit better by your actions, by listening to this show and doing, you know, listening to other shows and podcasts and educate yourself. And you can kind of control that. There's still some, you know, a fire or things that are out of your control. But if you prep for that, mm-hmm. insurance and whatever, you can keep moving and kind of weather the storm, so to speak. So I love the debate between stock market and real estate. To me, is not even really a debate. I don't see how people do it. I don't see how you go back and forth with the ups and downs. I mean, it's like constantly watching something rise and fall. I mean, that you got zero control over. And I know a lot of guys say, hey, man, I do enough research. I can put myself in these situations. And I hear what you're saying.
Well, I think, you know, if you think about it, both of them have emotional, you know, swings. So stock market, you know, your emotions get tied into what the world, you know, economy's doing, and people just freaking out about got to sell off everything, or, you know, mm-hmm. you know, on the real estate side, you've got people that, you know, freak out about tenant issues and collections and leasing.
Oh, they freak out on everything.
Yeah. So you got to just, you know, you got to get mentally strong, whichever path you choose. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're saying today is just because what we've talked about with market slowing down, you know, we're coming through kind of a dip in economy, mm-hmm. interest rates are going up, still buy, you know, still do what
just
you got to do.
Adjust your numbers.
Just adjust your numbers. You know, we were, you know, when I first started back in 01, and I don't remember the exact years, but I mean, probably 04, 05. I mean, there's stuff that I bought at an 8% interest rate. I had 8% loans for years.
Man.
You know what I mean? Like, and you think about that and people are like, oh my gosh, you know, that's like a hard money, you know, interest rates.
But you still adjusted and made it work.
I made it work. I had to buy it the right price, you know, get my rehabs done the right way to cut that cost. And
what's the end goal?
Pay it off.
So if you have a higher rate and you can make it work and you pay it off, that's the end goal.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to get out to anybody and everybody that's listening. If you take anything away from this show and you follow our mentalities, which is a buy and hold for the long haul. Mm-hmm. I mean, we might have other investors that are doing something different, but the majority of our clients are buy and hold for the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to pay the house off. You
right.
want that residual income for retirement or for whatever it is. So what if you got a high rate through it? If you've bought it right,
mm-hmm.
then you can make it work. Something yeah. we talked about a few minutes ago. I'm talking with Dan Butler with Crestcore Realty this morning. Something we talked about just a few minutes ago was raise the rent.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, and a lot of investors ask me this, how do you raise a rent without scaring your tenant or upsetting your tenant? What are some of the ways? I'm sure there's not one just way, but in your opinion, what are some of the ways that you raise a rent on a tenant without
losing them,
scaring them, yeah, having to move out?
Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of moving into this topic, I think that you got to have a plan.
Yep.
You know, be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And stick to that plan. So that's probably the high level piece, you know. So part of that plan is, you know, and this is being transparent with, you know, for the listeners. I didn't have this philosophy when I first started. Mm-hmm. You know, my philosophy was month to month, don't disturb the tenant, you know, it's 750, keep it at 750. You know what I mean? Like,
because you're operating on a nervous mentality.
Nervous mentality, which, you know, I have to fight that.
Still.
Yeah. You know, in a lot of different ways. But, you know, I think, first of all, you just start, you know, hey, let's try to push for annual raises, you know, of the rent, 3 to 5%. Mm-hmm. And so we've implemented that for us. And, you know, we're averaging probably 3%, you know, as an average. Mm-hmm. You know, but your whole goal is to keep the rent competitive with the market. And the tenants know. They know what the house down the street, Betty Joe down the street, two doors down is paying. And mm-hmm. they know what across the street's paying. So they know, you know, they all talk. So they know if you're trying to squeeze them too hard, and they'll push back and they'll say, well, that's too high for this neighborhood. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. so part of that's just listening to them as you're going through that process. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, that's where I would start. I mean, you know, I'd start early, you know?
Yeah. On the plan
to raise rent, start 90 days out, mm-hmm. you know, and just get with the tenant, get with your owner, or if you're the owner, kind of look at how did this tenant do, you know, what did they pay on time mm-hmm. for the last 6 months? Did they have any maintenance issues that, you know, do they have two issues in the last 9 months, you know, or is there like three every month, right. you know what I mean? And so that's going to dictate whether you give them an increase or not, because that increase could help, you know, you might say, well, overall they're a good tenant, but you need a little extra money to help pay for those maintenance calls, you know?
So. I've got a way to raise your rent. To mm-hmm. me, I had this happen to me yesterday. It's going to cost you a little money, but in the long haul, it helps. The guy, the tenant requested a refrigerator in the home.
Hmm. How long has it been there?
About 3 weeks. So I said to him, he said, well, should I, you know, he's from California, like almost all my investors are. And he said, well, I guess I got to go buy, you know, he was a little upset because he was right on the very, you know, he paid a little bit more than what he wanted to. There were some repairs that popped up on him, you know, which happens. And now the tenant is requesting a fridge, which I think it's a work, right? The tenants know that refrigerators aren't a standard feature here.
Right.
But they don't know, you know.
California didn't know that.
They don't know that. Yeah. So he asked me, what should I do? I said, well, you can go buy a refrigerator for $500, cheaper, $350. You can get some kind of refrigerator. I said, but I wouldn't do it without telling them we need a $25 rent increase. Now, it's a push for the first year. You know, right. you're spending $300 or $400 to get it in there. But if you got a long-term tenant, in my opinion, that's a great way to raise the rent. You might even try for 50. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can make a little bit. So if it's a 700, hey, say, I'll get you that. You know, that fridge, but we're gonna have to raise the rent up to $750. So that's one way. And it isn't just a fridge. I mean, you could throw in other appliances. To me, I know you might think a little bit different of this, but to me, a dishwasher and a stove is a standard feature.
A minimum. Yeah. What's a dishwasher?
Yeah, right.
your hands and Palmolive. Yeah. You know, rubber gloves.
How many dishwashers do you own? 500 dishwashers.
No, I bet we don't own 5.
Because you don't put them in any, right?
Mm-mm.
So
he's like, man, I don't know how to answer that.
I don't. So these California investors right now are listening and going, what?
What?
Because they think, I swear, they think it's dishwasher, oven, microwave, refrigerator.
The whole package, yeah.
And possibly someone have even said washer, dryer.
Oh, yeah. You have to talk them out of that one.
Talk them out. I've literally had to talk guys out of putting a washer.
Yeah, please do not spend this money.
Yeah, because all they're going to do is have repairs on it. They're going to come back and wonder why they got so much maintenance. But so bringing this all back around, you can use things like a fence. I've had people say, hey, I want a fence, and I guess it's expensive, mm-hmm. but a fence, a fridge, a microwave, an extra air conditioning unit in the back of the house, whatever it may be,
a fan,
yeah. ceiling fan, stuff that you don't, that aren't required for the home to be habitable, you can add in and kind of use as a negotiating tool. Now, you can't raise rent $150 on a $600 rental, but mm-hmm. $50 for sure. And I know the first year of that is going to be a wash essentially, but if you've got, or have him sign a 2-year lease,
right?
You know, there's different ways that you can raise the rent or better your circumstances with that tenant without just totally, you know, losing your mm-hmm. shirt. What are some of these other things, Dan? You know, we got here, fix things, don't let maintenance issues linger. What else, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's huge. You know, I think that if you look at reviews and look at feedback and, you know, tenants want their stuff fixed. And, you know, and it's a fine line between, I mean, as a property manager specifically, you know, don't spend the owner's money to fix things, but fix things so the tenant's happy and safe and habitable.
You got a constant balance because if you got a happy owner, you got an upset tenant. If you got a great tenant or a happy tenant, then your owner's upset.
Right.
So there's the medium there.
We are constantly in that, you know, in that seesaw, that negotiating in the middle, you know, so that's a tough spot to be in. But if, you know, I've always been the mindset, you know, you've heard me use the book QBQ, personal accountability, just make no excuses. So I'll spend a couple $100 here and there on a tenant that wants this and that fixed and, you know, that kind of stuff. Because when the rent's due, then there's no qualms about
the rent,
you know, you know, that, because that's the first thing that a tenant's going to bring up if they're late is, well,
I just had one.
Yeah.
Just had it.
Yeah.
They wanted an extra air conditioning unit in the back of the house, a wall unit. But they hadn't paid the rent.
Yeah. So
I'm sitting here like, so now we're going to have a contest to, you know, see who's going to bend first.
Yeah.
To me, I went on ahead and did it because it's my home. Mm-hmm. It's my investment. The tenant is not mine.
Right.
I'm going to protect the home and the asset first.
Right.
And if they don't pay rent, we'll get them out. But so I went on ahead and did it. And sure enough, a week later, they brought the rent in.
Yeah. I had a similar conversation with a tenant last week with just the whole concept of, you know, there was, you know, say roaches in the house. So we called an exterminator, did what we needed to do and got things addressed. But then they didn't want to pay rent. And it's like, ma'am, how do you think that stuff gets paid for? You know, like
You mean they didn't want to pay that month or something?
Because they felt they were inconvenienced and that kind of stuff. So
they want to be credited a whole month rent?
Oh, yeah. Oh, so I guess what I said.
Goodbye.
I said, well, let's let y'all go ahead and move by the 31st. Let's go ahead and, you know, okay.
Sure, you don't have to pay rent.
I need you out by the 1st. You know.
And then the rent came in.
The rent, you know, changed the tune, but it was interesting. But
talk about asking for upgrades. Go. I'm sorry, Dave.
Yeah, and just respond quickly when they call.
Yeah.
You know, answer the phone, call them back really quick. You know, just show that service. You know, whether you're, you know, using a property manager, make sure that they have that kind of system in place or that you have that capability, you know, to answer that tenant's call. You know, because the last thing they want is just getting voicemails.
Yeah.
And no responses. And,
yeah.
You know, I think it's still okay to text, you know, when somebody's calling you, then you say, just text and say, hey, just let me know what you need. And you can handle your business that way. But just a response
of some kind.
So, and I'm saying all this to build up to where, you know, getting rent increases is less and less an issue or not as hard. Mm-hmm. It's just going, you know, letting things happen as they may during a year. And then, hey, by the way, I need $25 more this year. And like, what? Well, you didn't create any value for me.
Yeah.
That's how they're going to look at it. So, but you talked about upgrades earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a key, that's an easy one. You know, spend $300 on a fan or, you know, a window unit, you know, for an extra bedroom. Mm-hmm. That saves that $2,000 rent ready that you would have spent if they didn't want to stay, you know, and to your point, try to get that 2-year lease. You know, that's a huge deal.
Keep your process consistent. I love this one. Tenants talk, and that's the truth.
Oh yeah.
Tenants talk. They communicate with what's going on. They know management companies. If they're a career or a lifelong tenant renter, they know the management companies.
Yeah.
They know the tendencies of management companies. So
yeah.
if you waffle back and forth on different things, they're gonna pick that out on you.
Oh yeah.
Stay consistent, and then, you know, I like this, and I'll let you go into it, but never, ever lose a great tenant. Tell me what you mean by that. You mean a great tenant to me is somebody that pays on time.
Pays on time, low maintenance, you know, is not, it's just not an issue. You know, they just take care of the house, and they create is a steward of that house. And so if it means foregoing a rent increase this year, you know, at the end of the day, you know, our team knows, you know, it's got to be a win-win. And so if they know the market and you're kind of pushing the envelope on that market and they've been a great tenant, you know, don't lose them. You know, don't get an increase just for the sake of getting an increase, I guess what I'm trying to say.
All right, so interest rates are rising. Inventory is low.
Yeah.
We ask the question, now what? for us, it's just to kind of wrap it up. Yeah. It's stay consistent with your process. Continue to buy because it's not, you know, this might be the program going forward. This might be the conditions you're having to buy under. So don't wait on something to change. It's not in your control. Any other points from today that you want to leave us with?
No, I think, you know, the Warren Buffett quote, you know, is an awesome one as far as just, you know, be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful, be greedy when others are fearful. So if, to me, we're getting into that, we've gone from greed and we should be more cautious. We've talked through that to where, you know, now people are being fearful. So it might be a time to, I mean, I've talked to so many investors that are just stockpiling cash and
ready to go
for when, you know, the market turns.
So. I appreciate you coming in today.
Yeah, thank you.
Guys, go to the website, www.crestcorerealty.com, to check out the investments of the week. And also go to the show's Facebook page, The Memphis Real Estate Hour. If you missed any of today's show, I'm going to post it there here in just a few minutes. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week, next Tuesday, on the Memphis Real Estate Hour. See you then. Yeah, was crawling in the darkness.